It's the JITA Interviews, the premier global IT solution podcast, where we talk to the CEOs and business leaders who are growing their companies through global partnerships. I'm your host, Emery Geositz, the executive director of the Global IT Alliance. Hi, welcome to the JITA Interviews. I'm Emery Geositz, the executive director of the Global IT Alliance, and I am joined today from the land down under, which I'm sure he's tired of hearing people say. I won't say anything about Barbie or shrimp or anything like that, but I will introduce my friend Anuj Anand, who's joining us from Brisbane, Australia. Hi, Anuj.
G'day, Emery. So great to meet you. I was hoping you were going to sing that when you said it from the land down under. That's one that I haven't heard yet.
I'm a huge fan of Men at Work, but not today. Nobody wants to hear me sing, I can assure you. So, Anuj, you occupy the role today of CIO of this great organization. Can you tell me a little bit about the organization and what you guys are focused on?
Yeah, of course, mate. And great starting point. You know, I think Osenco in general has been in the industry for 30 years as of last year. We just celebrated our 30th year. Wow. And, you know, pedigree really formed in that mining ecosystem, if you will, you know, so starting from, you know, humble beginnings with six people in a small office to, wow, you know, more than 3,000 people, I think, plus minus on any given Sunday, where we are today with a fair few acquisitions along the way. You know, I love to explain it. I don't know if it's a similar sort of case in the States or around the world, but in Australia, you know, I love to use the analogy when we're here, and I hope this lands correctly, Emery. You know, when you build a block or build a house, you can go to a builder, you know, that does very cookie cutter builds. You know, they'll copy a design and paste it, you know, and you can change a few things internally, like walls and things, but the structure and, you know, everything stays the same. However, as soon as it gets complicated, you know, you've got a narrow block of land or, you know, a slope, or it has to be built on a hill or an area that's the soil's not the best. You have to go to a very boutique, you know, builder that's going to think about things differently, not just do that copy paste. Nothing against the competition. They do really well with that sort of model. But, you know, that's where Osenco has really hit its traps when it comes to the mining sector. You know, that real boutique offering with complicated projects. You know, we've built mines on the side of a mountain, higher altitude than Machu Picchu. You know, we've built mines in remote areas of Africa that are really hard to get to. And it's really based on that ethos of finding a better way, you know, coming up with solutions that no one else is going to think about. And that's really where we've got to where we have. And, you know, Osenco in essence is an engineering, procurement, construction management company. You know, so we'll build the mine as a builder would build a house and hand over the keys. We'll help get to that point. There is some maintenance aspect of things occasionally that we would look at, but most of the time we'll get to that point and hand over the keys, and we do that really, really well for what it's worth.
That, you know, just the way you described it, I think the analogy is perfect. How exciting to go to parts of the world that, you know, it really takes some talent to achieve what you're achieving, especially from a bespoke kind of perspective. That's a great way to describe it. I appreciate that. And of course, the nice part is you work with not one, but two, and soon to be three and four of the JITA partners. So I know that you've worked with Data3 for a very long time and CompuGen in Canada. I think you lived in Canada, in Vancouver for a while. Is that right?
That is right. Loved it. Some part of me misses the cold and 30 degree. I can't convert to Fahrenheit off the bat, but 30 degree warm, humid days over here. And watching the snow reports in Canada does, I do crave that back. But I lived in Canada, say, out of the last 12 years, I've been there for about eight.
So
back and forth a bit, but yeah, spent a fair bit of those informative learning years in Vancouver.
Yeah, Yeah. Well, it doesn't matter the conversion of Fahrenheit or Celsius because it's just warmer than everywhere we are in the U.S. right now. So it's a little chilly.
That's a great way to put it.
Exactly. It's a little chilly right now. So let's dive right in. You know, you're very engaged and you've been very progressive from an IT perspective. Tell me a little bit about how your role and how IT plays a part in this incredible industry you're in.
Yeah, look, a broad question, and I'll try, answering, from the start, I guess, from the role and, how it evolved to, where we are now and where we sort of think about technology and IT and what we've really done, so that my background, and sometimes, we might talk about this in the questions that I saw, Emery, but I do still have that imposter syndrome, coming into IT, because my background actually started from the floor at Asenka. I started off, now everyone's going to know it, but after this gets out, I started as an instrumentation engineer. Wow. At Asenka, and when was it? 2006, 2007.
Wow.
And still have that mindset. Asenka was still growing to be that, people were starting to talk about it as that really innovative company doing some great things, some complicated projects, and using new systems and technologies. And that was the draw card to the organization initially, apart from the fact that, as part of this transition from a graduate engineer to a engineer was the financial benefits of it, obviously. As shallow as it sounds, but
no, yeah, fully understand.
As a graduate, it makes a big difference. So it was interesting, and the moves paid dividends. I've always thought about things that I learned through that career and through that growth of finding a better way. In everything that we did, whether it was in instrumentation engineering, using new technologies, using the latest and greatest, or using what was available, but finding a better way to use it. Technology seemed to be the most reliable source to develop that efficiency.
Sure.
Or the way that, to kind of challenge the status quo and not just go, well, just because we did this for the last 5 years, or how you did things, some of the senior engineers may have done things. I actually always came in with that thought process, and there's got to be a better way to do this. I'm not going to sit down and manually go through and look at a drawing and then enter data on a data sheet about 12,000 times. So I came up with better ways of doing things constantly. And, I think that that in essence did pretty well for me. And at some point of time, our CTO and CEO and HR, Chief HR Officer, saw a few of the successes that we had in the project space, that I was working on. And in 2015, asked if I wanted to be part of IT. And a typical answer to start off with, I was like, oh, I don't know about being in IT. They tend to be a bit of a barrier to the progress, right? At the time it was like, oh, you can't do this. You can't have access to this.
A lot of no's,
you
right?
You can't do this. You know how it is, right?
Everybody, yeah, for like, sure.
Nope. Yeah. And you got to have admin access to do this. And, the answer I got was really interesting in the why I didn't want to be part of IT at the time. And they said, well, why don't you change some of that? If that's the reasoning. And, that come true, and it's the mindset that I've had from the start, moving into a director of IT role and then building up to a VP role. So I think the consensus at the start was, look, we've got a different thought process for you to, maybe within 10 years, might be earlier, but this was 2015, 2016. Think about the CIO track versus, an engineering manager. I was always part of a leadership track within the organization, and something that Asenka does really well is, personally, as an example and living case study, but across the board, is identify some talent very early on and develop that.
Sure.
And that was the offer on the cards on the table, and I decided to jump in, and obviously instead of the 10 years, managed to get to that CIO role within 4 to 5 years, which means I did something right.
Yeah, for sure.
Time.
For sure. Yeah.
And yeah, so we've taken that mindset and that challenge to really be part of the business versus the barrier, you know, that you don't have permission to do this. We spend a lot of time, and given the experience, some of my team also have industry experience, you know, started from the floor, yeah, if you will,
yeah,
to get to that point, you know. So we litmus test almost every project that we do, whether it's infrastructure, whether it's, you know, the latest in cybersecurity, which often misses the litmus test, but a lot of the time when it comes to improvements, it's what difference is it going to make to what we do every day? And that's what we really test constantly.
Yeah.
So that's where we're at. Hopefully, yeah, that gave you the answer that you were looking for. I know
No, it absolutely did. It absolutely did. And that's a really interesting journey. The thing I'm most impressed about what you said is the idea that IT has a seat at the table within the organization in the decision-making process. So you don't see that in a lot of organizations. It's usually potentially an afterthought or not something that is prominent, but I'm glad to know that you've managed to get that seat at the table in the decision-making process for the company, and that's pretty impressive. Thanks for sharing that. You know, there's two letters that you run into everywhere these days, and you could just be at Starbucks and people are talking about AI. I'm assuming, knowing what I know about the industry and what you've described so far, and from our partners, that AI is a potential big player in what you guys do. Can you talk a little bit about that? Do you see a future there for AI in your industry?
100%, Emery, and I think it's an area, probably every event, every session that we're in, you know, is brought up very, very consistently. You know, something that we've stayed quite cognizant of over the years is, you know, testing what's the buzzword, you know, and
right,
like, is this a buzzword right now? Like, everywhere you go, everyone's talking about AI, ChatGPT, amazing use cases, you know, really, really great at what they do.
Right.
You know, we've had that mindset, you know, we were early adopters in the cloud in 2012, 2013. You know, we actually embarked on a AI journey in 2019, 2020. You know, we actually ran three projects in parallel, which were fully AI based, probably with the leader in AI in essence at the time. You know, the bot basically beat Jeopardy. I'm not going to take its name, but you,
yeah,
can try to stay away from names, but we know who we're talking about.
Sure.
And, you know, so we ran through three projects at the time and we learned from each one of those. What we learned was AI at the time required a fair amount of investment for business use cases to be successful.
Sure.
So we actually, I can tell you the project that we ran through, one of the projects that was a litmus test for us was around, you could call it a contract analyzer. So if you think about the amount of contracts that we would get in that need to comply with our standard terms and conditions, what contract analyzer would do would actually go through, you know, absorb the contract and go through and tell you what was Osenko standard term and condition, you know, non-compliant. I guess the simplest one would be payment terms, you know, our standards 45 days end of month. This contract that's come in is 30 days end of month. Non-compliant requires a change. We kind of ran that through the gauntlet, you know, spent a fair bit of time. We actually needed to get our legal team involved to go through the contracts, plus someone from the digital team to make sure that we've got the right people in place. And it took us almost a year to run through that and you know, get it up and running with five terms of five clauses. To actually make it a successful use case, we would have to get to, you know, anywhere between 20 to 30 theoretically, you know,
wow,
to make it a successful product. And again, taking into account that there's a fair element of risk when it comes to legal contracts.
Sure, right? Considerable,
like
yeah.
Make sure, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, to run that through and spend a year, I guess we answered the question, yes, it's possible. You know, yes, there is reality in this space.
Right.
The second thing that we answered was to get it to be successful, does take a fair amount of investment, just not from a capital perspective, but key resources from the business.
And you were an early adopter. It was early.
Yeah. And taking them away from the day job. Now, fast forward 4 years, you know, I think there's so many of these platforms that, you know, available off the shelf that would probably get us 70% of the way there. You know, I think that's that step away from purpose-built AI to rules-based AI. You know, so we're still well within the space. We've got our large language model. We're approaching some of our service tickets, you know, within the, you know, level one, level two, tier one, tier two service tickets, you know, using AI, you know, in a chat bot, the large language model, doing that quite well.
Yeah.
You know, we've had that for about 5 months now, and the uptick in, you know, the amount of tickets being resolved is quite successful.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's an interesting use case in AI, and we're still with it. We're still looking at opportunities to use it effectively for some more innovative projects. We've seen, you know, when we compare and sit down with, you know, our peers, our clients,
mm-hmm.
there's appetite for it to be used. You know, and there's some of the, and you'd be seeing this as well, Emery. I'd love to hear your point of view as well, but you'd be seeing this, you know, where there is the requirement and the need to test it out and spend the time. And, you know, I was speaking to one of the big oil and gas companies over here and their CIO, and they said they're going to run about 100 projects, and hopefully one of those is going to be successful.
Amazing.
And this was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, so you can see that happening across the place. We're a bit more practical. We're not going to run 100 projects, but we are going to run like 3 or 4 and see which ones are successful.
Yeah.
And, you know, make sure that those are the ones that are going to make a massive difference to that bottom line.
Yeah, for sure. And you hit the nail on the head with the risk aspect, right? I mean, 100 projects is a little crazy and aggressive. Your approach is a little more measured. I'm finding that I don't know if everyone knows they have to do something around it. Whether or not they've figured out what that is for their particular industry is a different story. But I think we're at the infancy stage of something incredible. So it's kind of fun to watch and be aware of what you're watching as it grows. So it really is incredible. So we'll see how that takes off. I tend to think with the amount of data that you see in what you do and the critical infrastructure parts of what you do, the next big thing for you, and you touched on it a little bit, is cybersecurity. You know, how do you secure with vast amount of sites and employees and your overall IT infrastructure? What is your security practice or best practices around it?
Yeah, look, it's probably the one where, you know, I think we spoke about this when you were here as well, Emery. You know, it's probably the area that we've had to learn the most about. You know,
right.
We've got some really great resources, and, you know, for myself, having to spend a fair bit of time learning about, you know, what's out there and, you know, what the threats are and where we should be investing to overcome and make sure that we protect the perimeter. And, you know, so it's a broad question, and, you know, broad answer to that question, I think, is, you know, across the geographies that we operate in and across the sites that we operate in, the first and most important thing that comes to mind is training employees.
Mm-hmm,
you know, I think that's probably the starting point for any good cybersecurity plan or strategy. Is
because that's also the starting point for your biggest breach.
Exactly.
Right. Right.
It's the one area, and it's probably the hardest one to control. You know, and as much as we go through training programs, you know, we spend plenty of time sitting down. It is an area of risk because you could have new people come in, and, you know, I think the example that you get and we talk about within the tech space all the time is someone plugging in a USB unknowingly, right? Not that it is possible anymore, but, you know, in a lot of organizations, it is possible to still do that.
Sure.
The other area, I think, that organizations and that, you know, you have to consider spending a fair bit of time in is backups, right? Like, you know, we had a chat with the FBI cybersecurity specialist a couple of years ago, and you know, they spoke about constantly, like in their messaging, you know, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when.
For sure.
You get breached, right? Like constantly, you know, almost all of their slides, you know, and through the presentation, it was like this in inverted commas, you know, typical scare tactic, yes, but also in a way true, right? Like there's, and the amount you can spend, and this is a bit of a personal view, but I feel like the amount you can spend in cybersecurity now is, you know, you can keep going, but what I need to stay cognizant of and other CIOs need to stay cognizant of is that balance, right? Like when is that number more than what you're trying to protect?
Very true.
You know, is it 10 million? Is it 50 million? Right. You know, at some point in time, you're going to have to make that call and explain to the board that, you know, this is what the decision is, right? Like, you know, I'm going to spend whatever X amount of money protecting the crown jewels, but, you know, I'd rather invest on backups than, you know, three tiers, four tiers, five tiers, whatever that number is, because there will be a point of time when it happens. Yeah. But, you know, as long as we can restore within a certain period of time, we should still be okay versus spending that amount of capital.
You know, that's a great point because, you know, at some point you got to leave something to chance because you can't keep throwing money at the problem. It's clear that money doesn't solve the problem always. I think oftentimes about the breach at the Target stores here in the U.S., one of the largest breaches we've ever had, and the illicit party went in through the HVAC system, which I'm sure they never thought would be the path to wiping out Target's credit customers' credit cards, and there it was. So I agree with you wholeheartedly. There is a infinite amount of money, but those decisions are important and have to be made. Thank you for that. So just changing gears a little bit, you know, you mentioned Machu Picchu and some other locations that are super remote. Tell me a little bit about how you, if you do even, manage your IT organization, your infrastructure with those kind of remote sites around the world.
Yeah, look, so a lot of the remote sort of sites that we have, you know, tend to be client infrastructure, even though we might have, you know, some of our infrastructure on those various sites. You know, if we're doing some commissioning work, we do set up, you know, our own servers, especially to transfer large join files. Used to be very, very complicated, you know, so it used to be, even if I go back to 2 years ago, Emery, you know, where we actually had the back and forth where people were, you know, doing their rotations, you know, and we had key personnel that we would actually send. We had two NAS drives and we would actually send it back and forth, you know, like with the latest information, you know, on their rotations.
Right.
So, you know, because connectivity at site a lot of the time tends to be quite poor, it used to be quite poor, but, you know, over the last year and a bit, again, with the evolution of tech, you know, Starlink, other permutations and combinations of that, that site connectivity has gotten leaps and bounds better, and the ability to share data back and forth has gotten a lot better. So, you know, even with some of the remote sites, even with the particular one in question right now, you know, where we were flying the drives back and forth, 10 times better. We're just, you know, plug and play. So we've actually got a setup where we're sending files back and forth, and you know, they're getting the latest information there. They're making updates. We're seeing them in the office. It's gotten a lot better. It even gets better, right? Like, you know, when we're talking about innovation and new technologies and being on the front foot, we've got sites where you can actually wear glasses with the camera and someone in the office can see what you're seeing and help with issues, right? Like you could be seeing a transmitter and seeing a configuration on a, you know, an indicator, and you know, someone in the office is looking at that with you, you know, able to pull up a data sheet on the side and say, all right, look, I can see on the data sheet while you're looking at that, that the temperature condition or the level condition needs to be X versus
Amazing,
Y,
right?
Right. So maybe you should change this. And those are the things that, you know, not the norm across everywhere, but you know, the areas that I feel we're going to be looking at because of that connectivity improvement, because now we can actually start taking advantage off these improvements versus what it was before, where, you know, if you tried this technology back, you know, even a couple of years ago, Emery, it would be more along the lines of, you know, where it'd be choppy connection, you know.
Oh, like yeah, it wouldn't be, right, right.
And now it's gotten 10 times better. So definitely an area we're going to put in some grunt into, you know, and having walk-through sites. We've got the drones going, you know, that are providing
sure.
feeds twice a week, you know, at certain areas and sites. So continuing to lead that charge. Great toys, but also some good results coming from it in the yeah. practical aspect of it.
I work, I consult with a company. It's actually a safety construction company out of New York. And the glasses have changed their industry. So rather than having to send someone on site, you've got the cameras, you've got everything else, and you have a safety engineer back in the office watching everything getting filmed from the individual's glasses. And they're able to assess the situation, make recommendations, et cetera. So yeah, really interesting technology out there to help those industries for sure. You know, as we come to a close, there's a couple of things that I wanted to ask you about. In particular, is, you know, we talked about AI, but is there a technology, is there something in our industry that's coming that you're excited about, that you, you know, want to get your hands on, or if you have your hands on it, you see the progression of it. Is there anything you'd like to highlight that you see in the industry that could be another game changer?
Look, I do think one area that we're constantly looking at is something that we touched on briefly with the drones and, you know, trying to bring, I spoke about it recently, and trying to bring what's going on at site into the offices is, you know, starting to get to that area where we're really merging geographies, you know, and I think we saw a bit of it with the whole work from home through the pandemic and, you know, that genesis of everyone, you know, starting to really blur those lines. You know, for us, I'm thinking that it's going to go a level further where, you know, instead of flying X amount of people to site on rotations, you know, we're going to start blurring those lines a bit more. And that's what I'm excited about, you know, where you spoke about the glasses and the construction industry kind of leading that charge, which tends to be, you know, when it comes to our space and the mining space, an area that we look at, or I look at constantly, is to see what's going on there and what successes they've had, because we can apply a fair bit of that within our industry as well. But, you know, that's an area, apart from the AI piece, that I think is going to happen, and there's a lot of investment and talk about it. I feel the area that we're going to really see some progress in, and the genesis, is around meshing and blurring those lines with site versus home. And companies are really starting to leverage this. Like, you look at the likes of, you know, in Santiago, I know Honeywell's doing some great work. BHP's doing some great work with IROC, which is fully where they're trying to get to, is like remote site operations. You know, so instead of, I can't remember the exact factor, but, you know, instead of sending X amount of people to site, they've reduced that number significantly with people sitting in offices looking at large monitors and screens, you know, so they're starting to leverage that a bit more. Like, obviously, autonomous vehicles is a big advancement in that area. And we're going to continue doing some good work in that space, because I still think that that's going to be the next innovation and disruption to a certain level within our industry.
Yeah, it's exciting to live through all of this. So I know you have, do you have two little kids, two children?
I do.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember talking about that. So my last question for you today is, with your little ones, is there some event, some vacation, something you're looking forward to in the not too far off future that is really keeping you motivated at work?
That's a great question, and definitely the curveball. So we're actually, you know, I think that there's two things I could tell you about. So we're going away this weekend to the beach, which is up the coast. So we're spending a weekend away, which we love doing and tend to do it as much as we can.
Great.
Given the Australian beaches and what's available.
Jealous.
On our doorstep.
Jealous.
Yeah, really close. But we are planning, if it all goes, falls into place, a trip to Spain this year.
Great.
So there's a fair few things that need to fall into place for it to happen.
Sure.
But fingers crossed and putting it out into the world, manifesting that it does, and not the other way around.
Absolutely.
But, yeah,
absolutely.
Really, we've been not confined by any means, but it's been a busy 2023 and leading up to it. So this is going to be that really exciting point and break that we're looking forward to.
That's fantastic. If you need anywhere between 5 and 30 recommendations for restaurants in Barcelona, I'm your guy. It's one of my favorite places on the planet.
I'm going to take you up on that.
Please do.
As soon as we start locking anything in, I will definitely hit you up.
Please do. If there's one thing I know, it's food. That's for sure. Anuj, this has been a pleasure. I thank you so much. I hope you have a great Friday there. I thank you very much for joining me today. This has been the Gita Interviews. For more information, contact Gita at www.gita.com. Thanks and have a good day. Thank you for listening to the Gita Interviews. To find out more about the Global IT Alliance, please visit www.gita.com or follow us for more great interviews.